is mainly due to the simple fact that they conclusively reveal the extent to which politicians in the West have been lying to their citizens. Crushing individuals like Assange and Manning is not difficult for a great power, however craven. The point is, we should not allow it to happen, which means those of us meant to keep the record straight should not collaborate in any way. Transparency and information, to paraphrase Thomas Jefferson, are the currency of democratic freedom. Every news organization, a leading American constitutional lawyer told me, should recognize that Julian Assange is one of them, and that his prosecution will have a huge and chilling effect on journalism. My favorite secret document, leaked by WikiLeaks, of course, is from the Ministry of Defense in London. It describes journalists who served the public without fear or favor as, quote, subversive and threats. Such a badge of honor. And that was an article including some, quotations from an interview he did with Julian Assange. The article is written by John Pilger. And I hope you enjoyed that. I thought it was outstanding. John Pilger is a beacon of truth and honesty. It's refreshing. And that's on the Truth Out website if you want to read it for yourself or send it to your friends. So it's truthout.org. And a number of comments. I'm going to let you find that yourself and read it all about it if you wish. Again, that's on the Truth Out website, John Pilger's interview with Julian Assange. Okay, I would like to. Let me put on a song or so. You know, you can't really go wrong with Phil Oakes, and I know I play a lot of Phil Oakes on this show, but that's okay. He speaks my mind, as the Quakers like to say. Oh, that's a good one. Okay, this is called. Whoops. Oh, phone's ringing. Why is that not working? All right. You know, I'm gonna take this phone call. Free radio, you're on the air. Yeah. Hello, Charlie.
Let me do a show with you, Lynch, you think? I think we can pull it together.
On WikiLeaks?
Yeah.
Yeah, we might do that. Let me talk to you off the air, okay, later on.
All right, about what time?
Oh, I don't know, probably tomorrow morning.
All right.
All right, take care. Okay, all kinds of interest in WikiLeaks. Actually, it's my producer. I also do television, the producer of my television show, Voices from the Village, if you care to tune into that sometime. And, you know, it just occurred to me that I might have people here listening on Free Radio Santa Cruz in other parts of the world. I know that we get cards and letters and emails from, you know, places that are outside of the United States who listen, obviously, on freakradio.org. And I would just tell you, I could promote my own show here on my show, promote my other show on this show. So I do a show on Santa Cruz Community Television. It's called Voices from the Village. And you don't have to have cable TV. You don't even have to live in the United States to watch it. You just go to communitytv.org, and you can watch the show, and you can watch it live. Or what's probably a lot easier for you is to watch it in this archive version. So again, communitytv.org. And then you look for Voices from the Village. That's the name of the show. And click, you can search for old episodes and that sort of thing. Anyway, that was my, and you can watch it. You know, we do a lot of different subjects. It's rather varied, more varied than this, I have to say, because this is like mostly me. And on the TV show, I'm interviewing all kinds of different people. Let me think what I was going to say. So that was my producer who called Charlie Phillips, and he's suggesting that we do a show about WikiLeaks for our next TV show, which will be in a couple of weeks, well, about a week now. And it's a hell of an idea. Okay, I'm going to see if... There it is. Finally got my CD... Oops. I got the CD player here to read the text, to read this disc here, which I just put into here. So I'm going to give you a... a song by Phil Oakes. I don't think I've played this on this show ever before. Yeah, maybe I have, but whatever. Anyway, it's called The Ringing of Revolution. Phil Oakes.
We'll do a song then about revolution. Song of what's been true of all revolutions from the beginning, the French, the American. This is a fictional song, a cinematic song. You've got a picture, this mansion on the top of a hill housing the last of the idle rich, the last of the bourgeois, the last of the folk singers. As they're being encircled tighter and tighter by the ringing of revolution, all the people on the inside spiritually resemble Charles Lawton. And all the people on the outside physically resemble Lee Marvin. As a matter of fact, the song is so cinematic that it's been made into a movie. It stars Senator Carl Hayden as Ho Chi Minh. Frank Sinatra plays Fidel Castro. Ronald Reagan plays George Murphy. John Wayne plays Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson plays God. I play Bobby Dylan. The young Bobby Dylan. In a building of gold with riches untold lived the families in which the country was founded, and the merchants of Star with their vain velvet smiles were there, for they also were hounded, and the soft middle class crowded into the last, for the building was fully surrounded. And the noise outside was the ringing of revolution. Sadly they stared and sank in their chairs and searched for a comforting notion. And the rich silver walls looked ready to fall as they shook in doubtful devotion. The ice cubes would clink as they freshened their drinks, wet their minds in bitter emotion. And they talked about the ringing of revolution. We were hardly aware of the hardships they bared for our times taken with treasure. Oh, life was a game and work was a shame and pain was prevented by pleasure. The world cold and gray was so far away and distance only we could measure. But their thoughts were broken by the ringing of revolution. And the clouds filled the room in darkening doom as the crooked smoke rings were rising. How long will it take? How can we escape? Someone asks, but no one's advising. And the quivering floor responds to the roar and a shake, no longer surprising. As closer and closer comes the ringing of revolution. So softly they moan, please leave us alone, as back and forth they are pacing. And they cover their ears and try not to hear, with pillows of silk they're embracing. The crackling crowd is laughing out loud, peeking in at the target they're chasing. Now trembling inside the ringing of revolution. With compromise sway, we gave it half away when we saw that rebellion was a-growing. Now everything's lost as they kneel by the cross where the blood of Christ is still flowing. Too late for their sorrow, they've reached their tomorrow and reaped the seed they were sowing. Now harvested by the ringing of revolution. In tattered tuxedos they face the new heroes and crawl about in confusion. And they sheepishly grin, for their memories were dim of the decades of dark execution. Hollow hands raised, they stood there amazed in the shattering of their illusions, as the windows were smashed by the ringing of revolution. Down on our knees, we're begging you, please. We're sorry for the way you were driven. There's no need to taunt, just take what you want, and we'll make amends if we're living. But away from the ground, the flames told the town that only the dead are forgiven. As they vanished inside the ringing of revolution.
And that was indeed The Ringing of Revolution by Phil Oakes, also known as The Rhythms of Revolution. He use that phrase instead of the ringing of revolution as well, if you look at some of the old broadside texts that kind of originally conveyed a lot of his original lyrics, which I was a big fan of many years ago, as I would thumb through the broadside folk song stuff. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, or you could be tuning in at TuneIn on the stream, where you go to just check your browser, click on TuneIn, and then put in FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you'll catch the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'll be with you for 2 hours. This is my usual Thursday evening show. It's, what am I going to be doing tonight? I had some in-studio guests. They have both failed to appear, and they will be suitably punished. Perhaps next week I will punish them in person on the air. One of them was a harmonica guy who I ran into at the anti-box store, no box, no mega Safeways demo that happened a couple weeks ago out in Aptos, Marco Harps, and he may be on in sooner than we think. He did call me earlier today. He was up in San Francisco. He apparently had another gig he was doing. I've had problems scheduling him, too, and I've had to cancel him. He's had to cancel me. We are canceling right and left, but he may be on at some point, and we can hear how he plays. He may be on Sunday. It's a possibility. He said that could be something he might want to do. And the Sunday show, of course, for all you regulars, as you know, is 9:30 in the morning, runs to 1 or a little beyond. And that's a big chunk of time. My name is Robert Norse, and the subjects I usually carry and cover and go on about have to do with the local struggles around what often seem kind of petty issues in a certain sense, absurd little laws around sitting on the sidewalk or being able to sleep at night if you're a homeless person without being harassed, or the behavior of alleged homeless service providers who seem to be providing less services than they claim to be. And that may be coming up on a community TV show. It's going to be filmed next Wednesday, I believe. Mayor Don Lane, if I'm not mistaken, has agreed finally to come on the air with activists who are concerned about the disability discrimination that some claim has been happening out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center at Coral Street, 115 Coral Street, Monica Martinez land, as I term it after the executive director. And it won't be airing on community TV probably for a while after that, but I will be trying to play the audio, assuming the show does come off. And hopefully there'll be some educational exchange where the mayor, who's also on the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, will respond to the concerns of activist John Colby and the clients he's represented and other activists in the community. And there'll be some understanding of what the procedures or lack of procedures of the Homeless Lack of Services Center really is around disabled folks. And apparently there's a large percentage of disabled people mentally and physically among the homeless population, and I think specifically out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, though I don't have the stats on that. So that should be, that's kind of in the cards. Kind of a couple of updates while I'm huddled here at the mic. We went to, some of us, into court today in the latest chapter of the endless march of the Santa Cruz 11. That's the group of 11 activists who were charged with vandalism, conspiracy, and trespass for essentially being in a building with 300 other people last year that was briefly occupied, well, for 3 days occupied by various folks, the vacant Wells Fargo leased bank. There are plenty of vacant banks. Now there's 4 of them around that I know of, probably more, in the downtown area, all within a 4 or 5 block range of each other, all vacant, all fenced off, all kind of dead weight, while 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people have no shelter at night and face tickets for sleeping and for camping and for being in so-called forbidden zones, as every area progressively becomes marked as forbidden by the city authorities who are attempting to forbid homeless people from existing in Santa Cruz in public areas, particularly at night. If you can forbid them from sleeping, the theory goes, well, then that's going to make it difficult for them to exist during the day. I think they don't quite want to put it that way because it does sound a little genocidal, but that really seems to be the theory. They want to make the town less inviting, and there's going to be some discussion. There has already been some discussion, I'm afraid fearfully, there will be more discussion of proposals by the Coonerty majority on the shitty council. That's Ryan Coonerty, as distinguished from the elderly, better-paid Neil Coonerty, both of the Coonerty clan running the Bookshop Coonerty, or Bookshop Santa Cruz. Ryan Coonerty was a former mayor of Santa Cruz, still on the city council. He terms out in November, but he and Hillary Bryant, who is the probable next mayor, because she's now the vice mayor, as well as Lynn Robinson and David Chereses, make up a majority on the council, and they are either running scared or, I don't know, enthusiastically pandering or not quite sure what our level of attachment is, but they're they're going along with the get 'em out of town crowd that has always been in Santa Cruz and had a certain attitude toward homeless people, but it's represented by Take Back Santa Cruz, by the Santa Cruz Neighbors, by the Downtown Neighbors, by the Downtown Association. These are groups that like to claim that they really only are concerned about the bad homeless, you know, the people who stab merchants, you know, that large segment of the homeless community that is such a danger to all of us, and that the truly needy, they are, as conservatives throughout history have always been, they care a lot about our truly needy, of course. I don't buy that, not based upon the discriminatory legislation that's being proposed. And since the budget hearings, I guess the budget's going to be finalized in the next week or two, there's apparently some kind of, I haven't got the specifics, but it's a reporter for Santa Cruz Patch has advised me that there is, in fact, a move afoot in the budget to institutionalize a whole series of measures broken in the Sentinel, I mean, presented as proposed to cut back services, to require ID, and to require all certain various kinds of check-ins, police oversight of homeless people out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as if it wasn't there already. And that has been already, Monica Martinez, in her whorish fashion, has already jumped on board that one. I use the term whore quite consciously. I don't suggest she's a physical prostitute. I suggest rather she prostitutes herself to the merchants and the conservative community in order to retain funding for the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And I find that really a sad and, frankly, I was going to say infuriating thing, but I don't really, you know, I mean, it's not something that is really that unusual among poverty pimps who make their salaries off of homeless jobs, bureaucrats who do that. Not to say that they don't think they're doing the best for the homeless community, but when you present them with obvious issues like, you know, obvious realities, like you provide shelter for a tiny fraction of the homeless community, and you refuse to advocate for those who are outside suffering criminalization with the absurd situation where they're denying people shelter and at the same time denying them the right to sleep at night and claiming it's a crime, and then refusing to institute the kinds of legal reforms that have been done in much larger, more conservative communities like Los Angeles and San Diego, I look harshly upon such individuals, particularly when they like to put homeless service providers in front of their names and titles. It just doesn't sit well with me. But how does it sit with all you out there? What experiences have you had in the last week that you want to share on the air? You can do that. The phone lines are open. The numbers here are, as ever, 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772, and 831-469-3119, 831-469-3119. Call in if you've got some thoughts. I'm also up for reports from distant cities. For those who are listening on the Internet, and somebody was saying to me the other day, you're probably getting more listeners from far away than from Santa Cruz, which is both encouraging, because it's always nice to know there are listeners somewhere, and then a little discouraging, because who wants to hear about local Santa Cruz politics and problems if you are, I don't know, in Germany somewhere? I mean, it doesn't really, it's not too current for you. But nonetheless, I continue in my rote routine, endless fashion, continuing to give out these reports, and I probably will continue to do so until I can enter into some new phase of my career here, whatever that may be. How's about a little bit of street interviewing? That's what I also do from show to show. I wander about the streets with a tape recorder and pick up the latest from folks who are on the streets, who I run into either at the Red Church, which has a Monday meal, Calvary Episcopal Church. Calvary Episcopal also has a thing called Penny University. I talked about it last show. At that show, I actually ran into Don Lane. I should say at that meeting, usually overseen by Paul Lee, philanthropist, author, and in his own way, a homeless activist of a kind, and Bruce Bratton as a columnist who writes Bratton. I think it's Bratton.org, so you can find him online. And I've always been a little critical of Bratton because I feel like he does step up for certain conventional causes. He's against developer destruction of historic communities. He fought the Coast Hotel. He fought the La Bahia destruction. I think he also fought the DeSalle boondoggle. But he's never had too much to say about the rights of poor and homeless people. But he has, for example, recently come out with several articles denouncing the prosecution of the Santa Cruz 11, the people, as I mentioned before, who were charged with trespass and other crimes for reporting on being peacemakers at and whistleblowers at the vacant Wells Fargo-leased bank downtown that was briefly occupied way back in December. And Bratton, you know, has written some stuff. If you want to read more about the Santa Cruz 11, you can go to SantaCruz11.org. Spell it out, Santa Cruz 11, spelled out, .org, and you'll catch stuff on that. Former Santa Cruz 11 defendants, Alex DeRosi and Bradley Allen, who had charges against them dismissed, and hopefully they'll stay dismissed, have been covering events with gun and camera, actually just with camera and pen, I should say, not with gun and camera. Although next Sunday we may have somebody on who wants to talk about guns. That's a subject I don't usually get into because I'm ignorant about it and kind of afraid of it, actually. I haven't picked up a gun in decades. I did some riflery training when I was a youth. But guns, gag me. Anyway, the Santa Cruz 11 did get positive treatment from Bruce Bratton. Bruce Bratton runs the Penny University when Paul Lee isn't there. And Don Lane, our mayor, or their mayor, if you will, was showcased last Monday. And that was where actually we got him to agree to come on the air and discuss the problems of disabled people that we've discussed here on Santa Cruz. Or I should say the problems with getting fair treatment out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, where Don's also a member of the board of directors and has been for on and off for 20 years. I tried to have him on the show, and Don was on the show in the past, but he became upset with me for publicizing the criticisms of John Colby, which I found important and telling and worthy of serious response from Lane and Martinez and all the poverty pimp gang out there at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And instead of responding, they were attacking me and attacking Colby and saying everything's fine, the old whitewash story. We'll see if that actually gets some real substantive response on community TV, which, we'll find out about that. And if it doesn't get response there, then hopefully it'll get response somewhere else, because John Colby is a determined man and seems to know how to handle a Public Records Act request, and we'll see how that works. So let's hear a little bit from the streets, and maybe from you, 831-427-3772, and we will proceed to muddle our way through the show and see just what kind of mud we can stir up.
I'm out here at New Leaf around 5:30 talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
And standing nearby is another strong, silent musician,
Mr. Jerry.
And you guys are regular performers on Pacific.
Yes, we are.
Have you cut back your schedule because of, police
shenanigans?
Thank you, yes.
Fortunately, right now, at this time of year, they've got real criminals that they have to deal with. People skateboarding out at the boardwalk and stuff. But, here's what I have to add. How come that Officer Winston Salem, or whatever his name is, the guy who's named after cigarettes, how come he always rides around with some other big bruiser in the car late at night giving out tickets for sitting on the sidewalk or something to only selected people? Why do two of them have to ride around? If there isn't anything better for them to do, could we, like, fire them, take that money, and get inter-library transfer that we can't
ever
get?
The library supporter. Jay, what's your thoughts? Anything happening downtown?
I would definitely support the library, yeah. Well, you know, my friend was back from Mexico for one day, and he freaked out of all the cop activity. And he says, you know, I might not come back here anymore.
Your friend was a musician or just
a musician buddy of mine.
And you yourself are a longtime guitarist on the ball.
Yes, sir.
And have you been discouraged in your own activities, or are you doing...
Every once in a while. Like, these guys were just sitting here, and the bumblebee said, you got to be 10 feet away. And it's just so petty things. And it's just, really, you know? And so you move, or otherwise you think you've caused problems for you. I don't know.
The wind is blowing, which is probably making a big whoosh in the tape.
Yeah, it's a blustering thing, yes.
Thank you for the update, man. We've been talking with
Jay. You're welcome.
Thanks, Jay.
And that, I believe, was about a week ago, maybe two. However, on the line with us, we have a man who's actually been in charge of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, Doug Loisel, calling in from down south. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Robert. How you doing?
I'm good. I hope you forgive me for calling your old stomping ground the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I don't mean to be cruel or inexact. I'm just pissed at the management. I don't think I called it the Lack of Services Center when you were there, although you and I had our differences of opinion.
Right. Well, no problem at all. And I apologize. I know we had talked about coming on the air several times, and I think I was admitted my that I was slacking, so we can be even on that.
So now we've guilt tripped you into getting on the air, and now you're going to. Well, I'm glad we have you on the air, because I think let's see, you were director of the Homeless Services Center, or lack of service. Maybe it was a services center more back then. You actually did increase services. So, and Beck, why don't we talk about that? When were you the director back then?
I was director from, I want to say, March of 09 to October of 09, so about 7 months.
What when you came there, what problems did you see that existed, and how what changes did you make when you were there during that 9 month period?
Well, you know, besides the fact that there was all sorts of financial improprieties that were kind of glaring, and that they were really on the margin financially, and some of the decisions that were being made to divert funding from capital projects to operations, and then misrepresenting that to the persons that had supplied the capital money, that was a pretty big issue. And so that was one of the issues that was more of a business issue. As far as the services were concerned, I think the whole idea was to open up the services and, you know, kind of provide a broader, more user-friendly / accessible program. And there were certain things that I felt like were minor changes that really didn't increase the level of staff responsibilities or tasks. Such as allowing persons to use the restrooms at night. That was a big issue because, you know, apparently there was some sort of push among the city government to close down all the bathrooms in Santa Cruz with the idea that this was going to somehow push the homeless persons out away from the areas of commerce. And it probably did to a certain extent. But then there were also persons who had no place to go to the bathroom, and so then, you know, they would go to the bathroom, say, in a corner or behind a dumpster or something along those lines, and of course that was portrayed as this homeless or dirty, homeless lack morals, homeless lack hygiene, et cetera, et cetera. I just asked the question, why can't they use the toilet at homeless service center at night? And nobody can give me an answer as to why that would increase any. There was just no reason not to do that. So that's one of the things that we did. And then we had a big storm, I believe, in March or April, and we opened up the service center to anybody who was sleeping outside to sleep in the corridors. And that's something that somewhere along the line the city council had said we couldn't do. And we did it anyway. And it was 3 days. It was a really cold storm. And so, I mean, I thought it was fun. We had a big camping, mob. And, yeah, it was fun, you know. We had everybody sleeping, in the hallways. Anywhere we could put people, we slept them. And they were essentially sheltered. We put up sheets of plastic. You know, I thought those sorts of things were fun and adventurous. I was pushing to have the winter shelter moved from the armory, which was costing an arm and a leg, and just poor services. We were busing families up there. We were busing homeless persons up there, and then we would bus them back. And it was absurd when we could have just rented warehouse space in the Harvey West area. And then the city manager at the time was named Dick. Something, Dick Wilson.
Yeah, it's now Martin Bernal. Yeah.
What?
Dick the Dick.
What's that?
Yeah. Dick the Dick. Yes, Dick Wilson. Yeah.
So when I presented it to Dick Wilson and the rest of the gang, Dick and everyone was kind of on board with it. And Dick Wilson said, "Oh, that'll never happen because Plantronics is in the area and they're a Fortune 500 company, and we're going to do everything to make sure that Plantronics is happy. So we're not going to put any homeless in the Harvey West area." Even though they would be escorted back and forth from homeless services center, so that, you know, those types of battles, we were actually going to try to put in a 30 beds of recuperative care beds, so that persons who had come out of the hospital, say for example you had a broken leg, well they were releasing these people out onto the street, and they were giving them a 3-day voucher at a hotel. Well, that's absurd. I mean, when you do something like that, you just have a revolving door. Then their leg gets infected. Their cast gets wet in the rain, and then they're back in the emergency room, which is significantly higher cost than just providing them 30 days of recuperative care in a facility that has medical services. And so we were moving towards that as well. So, you know, I felt like we were moving in the right direction.
But the city wouldn't have to pay for the emergency room, right? That would be the, I don't know, state or feds or some other county maybe.
Well, we were going to get the hospitals to pay because, you know, the hospitals were paying all this money when, you know, the cost of somebody coming into a hospital emergency room is astronomical versus funding for, say, 10 recuperative beds divided by 3 of the hospitals in the area. I mean, it would have been cost effective for the hospitals to participate in this.
You know, at that time, Ryan Coonerty was had been mayor, I think, back in the, I think he was mayor in 2008, 2009. I don't know if he was mayor when you were actually on as the executive director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. But was he?
I don't remember. It was either him or that lady.
Cynthia Matthews, yeah.
Yeah, her.
She's running again, I'm told, or plans to, for the city council, God help us. What was your impression of Coonerty's politics? I say this because he's sort of become, though he's leaving office, he's termed out, he's kind of been, you know, the leader of the pack around this latest series of anti-homeless proposals that was mobilized by the Santa Cruz Neighbors and other anti-homeless, I call them anti-homeless groups because I think that's really what they are in this situation. After the Shannon Collins slaying, he and other city council members proposed this packet of poo-poo, I kind of call it. And you and I talked about it. You've read about it. But what was his earlier What was your relation with Matthews and Coonerty? How were they a blocking force? Were they a sympathetic force? Were they a neutral force? What and then also how did Lane and Byers assist you or block you? What I'd like to get some candid discussion of this, if you feel comfortable talking about it.
Yeah, of course. I didn't have much contact with Coonerty or Matthews, I'm not sure about Coonerty. I mean, he just seemed to toe whatever party line was going on at the moment, so I didn't really get a sense of what he was all about. And I really didn't have any contact with Cynthia Matthews, other than I thought she was trying to create a ring around the Episcopal Church, a no homeless ring around that kind of block there. That's the only thing that I really remember of her. Going back to this situation with, this unfortunate situation that happened with this young lady who was murdered.
Before you do that, what about Lane and Byers? Did you have much contact with them, the council members Lane and Byers?
Yeah. And I always thought Don and Kathy were level-headed and kind of, I think they were both, they had a lot of different forces pushing against them. Of course, they had the business forces. They had the forces of actually having a genuine heart for the people that Homeless Service Center served. I think in their role, they had to wear a lot of hats. And so I think they were trying to appease a lot of different factions and try to come up with some solution. I really felt, especially Don, because I knew Don well, I really felt like Don wanted to move towards some resolution of the homeless situation in Santa Cruz. And I don't think that he was interested in any way of moving the homeless out or this, let's export the homeless, let's give them a Greyhound bus ticket. I think he had a genuine compassion for the people that we worked with. He was also in politics. And in politics, you have a constituency, and the more vocal, powerful constituency, obviously, is the business owners and the residents who live in Santa Cruz who do the voting. So I think he, although a good person, and I think a very moral person and a compassionate person, he was trying to balance out all these different forces that were pushing in on him. That's how I experienced Don.
It was the next year when there were the Peace Camp 2010 protests at City Hall, and then it was, of course, this last year when there was the massive Occupy Santa Cruz protests, which there's been some controversy even inside the Occupy Santa Cruz movement about the role of then Vice Mayor Don Lane, now Mayor Don Lane. I, of course, have been, a pretty unbending critic of his. Because I've seen him for 20 years doing his stuff, and I'm not impressed. I suppose he certainly could be worse, I suppose. But the question is, you have to judge. There have to be some basic principles. Let me ask you this, for instance. When you were on the Homeless Lack of Services Center executive director head, did you openly oppose the sleeping ban law? Did you come out against it? Did you speak out against the criminalization of the poor? Did you feel that was impolitic and might, get you kicked off your position or lose funding? What was your attitude toward that?
I wasn't really there long enough to really understand the whole culture and really to understand the issue, to be honest with you. So I'll be honest with you. I tried to play some middle ground, mostly between you and the board and the business community, and there is a bit of you do have to assuage a lot of different factions when you're in a position like that. That said, I think I would have had a lot harder time if I would have opposed opposed the businesses and sided with the sleeping ban. You're going to get a whole lot of crap if you support the sleeping ban as the executive director of Homeless Services Center.
If you support repeal of the sleeping ban is what you mean, right?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If you report repeal of the sleeping ban, your life is going to be a lot more difficult. You're going to take a lot more criticism. You're going to have a lot of people coming at you. And keeping in mind, you know, when you're the executive director, you're running a business, you know, and your business is people, and there's a lot of liability in that. So, you know, there is some self-preservation that goes on in a position like that. That said, if you really were a tough person, which I'm probably not, and you really had a level of courage, you know, you could oppose the sleeping ban and take a lot of grief for it, or, you know, you could support repealing the sleeping ban, take a lot of grief for it, but it would make your life a lot more difficult. And so I think probably Monica, and I think probably myself to a certain extent, somewhat avoided that issue.
You know, it's interesting.
If I could do it again, since I have nothing left to lose in my life anyway now, I would, of course I would oppose it. It's absurd, and it's a dangerous law.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's, and of course it's a dangerous police practice. The law simply is sort of the facial cover and the cosmetic cover for what is essentially a police practice of essentially giving the police free rein to deal with homeless people that they find at night however they want, in terms of ordering them to move on, giving them a ticket, giving them a pass, searching their property, interrogating them, threatening them. All these things are okay because of Municipal Code 6.36010A and the penal code, the state penal code, the anti-lodging law that's used in that regard. But, you know, the previous director of the Homeless Alaska Services Center, whose name was Ken Cole, who's now the director of the Housing Authority, a much more lucrative position, I understand, he was originally the vice chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which I used to call the Homeless Issues Task Farce. But nonetheless, I mean, it actually came up with some good statements. The problem was they were around at the turn of the millennium, like 1999, 2000, when there was a new city council in place. And Cole and then Linda LeMaster, who was chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, they and the task force came up with a series of emergency proposals, one of which was complete abandonment not just of the sleeping ban, but the entire camping ban. Because it's very nice to tell people, you can sleep outside, but you can't put a tent up in the rain. You know, that's the height of, it's like, it's equivalent to telling a person, we'll dump you on the street if you got a broken leg after 3 days in a motel room. And that's some sort of medical treatment. I mean, it's ridiculous. And he was head of the Homeless Alaska Services Center right after Karen Gillette, who was previously head of the predecessor organization, which was the Homeless Community Resource Center.
Right.
And when that combined with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and she was kind of kicked out of that position, Cole took over, and he was originally, he voted, you know, he was quite clearly against the sleeping ban. And it wasn't that had a remarkable impact, although there were actually several city council members who actually said they were against the sleeping ban at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They persisted in the position formally, and it's hard to say whether they actually, it had any real impact. They, you know, but the fact at least that it was, it became clearly, you know, a matter of a moral issue. It's sort of like, you know, the abolitionist movement around slavery, as I see it. I mean, it was very politically unpopular. I mean, people got lynched for being abolitionists in the, you know, in the early 19th century. And there was a gag rule imposed in Congress on the abolitionists. And, you know, people were forbidden to teach blacks how to read in the South. That was, I don't know if it was a death penalty, but it was a crime to do that in numerous states. But, you know, in Santa Cruz, it doesn't seem to me to be beyond the ken and beyond the pale to have an executive director be able to say, and he did, I'm against the sleeping ban. It's a stupid law. You know, it doesn't work. We've researched it. There are better approaches, and it doesn't result in everybody coming to town. You know, if you acknowledge the fact that people in a city where there's a declared emergency shelter shortage have to sleep. And so you're not going to, it also actually removes to some extent the liability of the city, because if you're actually arresting people for sleeping, you may find yourself at the business end of a lawsuit like Fresno did in the Kincaid case.
Right.
Or,
right.
You know, the Jones settlement in Los Angeles, or the Spencer case. So it has a sensible side too, but by the time you came along, which was 8 or 9 years later, apparently the climate had become much more reactionary. And I guess you felt you could not. Were you ever asked? I must have asked you how you regarded the sleeping ban. I don't remember us having much of a dialogue on this. Did you recall giving me an answer to that question when I asked you that question, or were you ever asked that publicly?
Yeah, I just took the high ground and said, you know, your role is different than my role. My role is to provide services, you know, on the HSC campus. You know, your role is to advocate for homeless persons in the community, and we have two separate roles, you know.
Uh-huh. That's actually that's the Ken Cole line, too. He did that as well later on in his progress.
Can I swear on the show, or is that against
the
FCC?
No, you don't want to do that, man. We regard you as an asshole if you swore on our show.
Okay, because now that I look back on it, it was kind of a chicken shit answer. So let me apologize for that.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, it's not so much, I'm not trying to, you know, make you to confess all your sins. I'm trying to get a sense of, you know, what's a realistic expectation, not necessarily even a realistic one, but to understand how times have changed, what we need to do to change them in a better way. And I also, I know I cut in on you because you wanted to talk about, I have tried to avoid talking about this, you know, bullshit hysterical response by, you know, some council members, which hasn't really come up in a specific format recently, except there's been rumors that it's been slipped into the budget as a sort of either a placeholder or privately or somehow. I haven't gotten any confirmation of it, and I don't have that story immediately before me, but, you know, there's some plans to, you know, give a bus ticket to homeless people who get out of town, only serve people who are born here, or, you know, I don't know, have birth certificates or are racially pure or whatever, you know. I mean, not racially pure, but anyway, so you, I know you were upset when you heard about these proposals. We've actually talked about them on the air a little bit. I hate to spend a lot of time because I really want to do is talk about what you think real proposal should be to provide real solutions, and that is really what I'd rather hear from you. But you also talk about what you'd like to for a bit, since I've been kind of directing you in another direction.
No. I think I said my piece about that. I mean, I just have a real issue with the kind of like this idea of tagging homeless people, you know, somehow. I mean, you know, somehow making them carry some sort of identification. If you're going to do that, if you're going to take a group of people who are being provided a service which is paid for by either the local, state, or federal government, and if you're going to make them carry some sort of identification or force them to identify themselves, then everybody has to do it, not just homeless persons. So everybody who's receiving Medi-Cal, everybody who's receiving Social Security, any type of government benefit, it's got to be across the board. It can't simply be homeless persons need to identify themselves as being homeless persons. I think that is discriminatory and absurd. And that was one of the points that they were talking about. And that cannot be in any way constitutional. I mean, that's just unbelievable to me. And I think in responding, the way that Homeless Services Center Executive Director Monica did and the City Council, it implied strongly that homeless persons are criminals, and that this is a problem that needs to be moved out of Santa Cruz. Obviously what happened had nothing to do with anything. It was a tragedy. And
You're referring to the slaying of Sharon Collins, the camouflage co-owner, right?
Well, the idea behind the 9 points is the implication that Homeless Services Center caused this to happen, and that Homeless Services Center, that somehow Santa Cruz's Homeless Services Center is a magnet for criminals, and we're pulling criminals in, and they're committing these heinous acts, and it's a terrible implication. It's a terrible stereotype of homeless persons, and I just was very upset that they were even, you know, kind of implying those things. You know, if you really, I just think if Santa Cruz was serious about creating a homeless situation, creating a humane system for helping the homeless, they would expand services, create more beds, do it on a harm reduction model, because what happens is persons who are using any type of substances can't get into these shelters, and so basically anybody who suffers from an addiction is out. And so they need to operate on a harm reduction model where the person isn't, if the person isn't disruptive, it doesn't matter what they're putting into their system. And I'm a strong believer in that. And that would actually help the homeless situation because you could manage this population better. And you could provide them with the services that they need to have a higher quality of life. Well, I don't think that that's going to happen anytime soon because there seems to be more of a push to just create a situation that's so unbearable that they're going to go to another town.
It looks like, that's of course that whole point, I believe. The story which you're referring to and which you were upset about a month ago, almost 2 months ago now, is a Sentinel headline, City Leaders Homeless Services Center Director announced new security proposals. And these apparently were set already in motion before Wednesday, the 16th of May, specifically tying city funding for the center to creation of an ID registry for clients and rules that place a priority on serving local people. No new homeless services facilities in the city. Expectation of other jurisdictions to work harder to address what they say is a countywide problem. Steps put forward by Bryant, Coonerty, and Robinson. City policy and spending priorities. And, of course, none of the proposals would have stopped the alleged slayer, Charles Edwards, of Sharon Collins. Nonetheless, Homeless Services Center Director Monica Martinez, according to Coonerty, they said the proposal was crafted after meeting with Martinez. Are you still there? I think we lost him. Maybe we'll get him back. I suspect we will. You are tuned to Free Radio, in case you just tuned in. We've been talking with Doug Loisel, who is the former director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, immediately preceding Monica Martinez and Letitia Schwartz. And I think we got you again there, Doug.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. So I take it, you were kind of bemused, puzzled, and perhaps a little upset that Monica's sort of helping to craft these proposals?
I don't understand how she is providing services for homeless persons yet saying, let's ship these people out of town, because they were talking about, there was this overblown perception that the San Francisco program was a stunning success. Well, it wasn't a stunning success. Okay.
And what program is that? What program is that, Doug?
The same busing. It's a Greyhound. They purchase Greyhound tickets for persons who meet a certain criteria, and then they ship them back to wherever. I think it's called Homeward Bound or something like that. And HSC apparently spent $5,000 last year sending people in this Homeward Bound program. Monica Martinez stated that only 5% of the persons returned, which is an impossible number to verify. There's just no way to statistically, it's nonsense to say something like that. And so, to have an executive director of a homeless services center who's saying, we need to move these people out of town, or we need to somehow tag these people, or identify them, or one of the parts of the proposals was, report criminal activity that goes on the homeless services campus. And I find that absurd because shouldn't you be doing that anyway? I mean, if you see a crime, so that's a new policy that before they were like letting people participate in criminal activity and not reporting it. And I all think this was just window dressing to appease the public to somehow say you're going to be safer now because we put these policies in place. Well, none of the policies had any teeth to it. It wasn't going to solve anything one way or another. It was just a bunch of words put out to make people feel safe. Okay, kind of like the Bush administration, you know, red, yellow, green, blue system of terror alert. Mm-hmm. You know, it had nothing to do with anything. It's just put out there to somehow manipulate the public's perception.
Well, you know, I notice, again, looking at this story, that the Sentinel, which is always a dubious source, claims that Coonerty said the proposal was crafted in recent days in meetings with not only Homeless Services, Lack of Services Center Director Monica Martinez, but police, county health services, and citizen groups like Take Back Santa Cruz. Now, I don't think Take Back Santa Cruz was in much operation when you were around, but there were the Santa Cruz neighbors. Did these groups have much impact, or the Harvey West Association? How did you describe either the difficulties or the accommodations you had with them? How did you face off with or accommodate these groups?
Yeah, I didn't really have any contact with them. How can I say this? There didn't seem to be a lot of backlash. I mean, there didn't seem to be, other than the sleeping ban, which was the primary issue at that time, there wasn't this huge, you know, backlash against the homeless. I believe that there was one person, they were going to try to put in some... One of the other things they were working on was trying to reduce panhandling in the downtown area. That was another issue. But it seems like maybe the issues have more traction, or they're more into public awareness now. Because I never really had any contact with those groups. And they never contacted me, and I never contacted them. So I never really felt any pressure to do anything different other than provide services on the campus, do the best we can, try to keep some of the loitering that was going on Coral Street to a minimum.
Let me take you up on that. Now, what they've done recently is they've established the so-called no-impact zone on Coral Street, which says that... I guess it's a two-block area around the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which I hate calling the campus, by the way, because it in no way resembles a real college campus or anything else. It's, it's a little ghetto that has actually moved from being a ghetto to be an exclusionary zone that you can't be in during the day unless you are there on specific business, which I believe was not the case when you were, or am I wrong about that? When you were director, people were allowed to actually sit down and stay there, or were they not? Did you hustle people out of there during the day and say, come back later for meals and then leave again? Or what was your...
No. They could access the campus anytime they wanted to. Sorry, not the campus.
You can call it the campus. When Linda LeMaster, who's on the show occasionally, says campus, I savagely attack her terminology, and I feel it's a little sexist and unfair of me not to attack you as well. So, So there.
Feel free.
Yes.
I didn't understand why that was an issue. I mean, people can access, you know, the facilities there during the day, and you can sit down and you can have a cup of coffee if you want. Up to you, you know.
Now, was that a change from the prior policy of Ken Cole?
I think it was. I think, you know, a lot of these policies, what you have to do is you have to try them out and see if they work. Because a lot of times you have something in your head as an executive director that you think to yourself, well, you know, I wonder if this is going to work. So rather than putting it in as a full-blown policy, what you have to do is you have to try it out, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that we did while I was there, we said no riding your bicycle on the campus. And because people were riding their bikes around and people were almost getting hit constantly, right? And so we stopped that, and the campus kind of calmed down and it became a lot more peaceful. So you try something like that, and then it works, and you say, okay, let's make a policy, you know? So that's what we did that a lot and kind of experimented around and played with things to see what we could do to, once again, increase the quality of life of these persons who weren't housed.
Now, an issue that's been coming up recently because of
The very vigorous advocacy of a guy called John Colby, who I think I've mentioned to you before, has been the treatment of physically and mentally, mostly physically, disabled people, people with walkers, people in wheelchairs. The specific kind of flashpoint that happened about two or three weeks ago was a guy called Steve Lazo was trying to take a shower. No one would help him, so a woman named Mia agreed to help him take a shower, and they were both evicted and put out for, I guess it was either a week or a month from the Homeless Lack of Services Center for, I don't know, showering without permission or showering without a permit or, you know, mixed gender showering, though she was simply, according to her account, and I guess what was later confirmed, simply being a caretaker and a helper there. You may remember Mia. Do you remember a woman named Mia who was, she claimed she'd been in trouble there before, that she'd, you know, she'd been evicted a number of times, but she'd always come back. She actually was a big supporter of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, much more so than myself. But in this situation, you know, she was rather upset, as were other people, including Colby and Andrea Morgan, who is another activist who has been ousted from the Homeless Service Center. Colby was, this guy Steve was, he was in a wheelchair. He was forced to, you know, spend the night outside on the street because of this illegal showering. Did you have a policy similar to that? I mean, how did you deal with those issues, and was there an appeal process, and how were disabled people treated generally when you were there around during that 9-month period?
Well, I think we, from my understanding, how I know I would have operated, I don't remember any specific instances, but you know, everything according to ADA, so according to the American Disabilities Act, so you, and Title IX, which is basically equal access, so you have to, you're required to the best that you can to provide equal access for all persons, including disabled persons. I don't know what happened in the instance that you're referring to, but it seems a little bit, I don't know, maybe a Victorian sensibility that a woman can't help a person shower who's disabled. I don't understand that. I'm not making excuses for Homeless Services Center, but it could have been a lower level staff who made the decision. I think if I were the director there, immediately I would have overturned it, but I don't know what the specifics were. I did have a policy that any client who wanted to see me could see me, and I had all sorts of clients come into my office, and you know, it was like a court. You know, they come in, they plead their case. You know, you sit behind your desk and you make a decision, and it, you know, you try to do the best you can for people. You
now,
know,
was there an appeal beyond you, or were you the ultimate authority?
I mean, they could have. I mean, usually I was able to resolve things in a way that, you know, was amicable for all parties involved. You want to create win-win situations. You don't want people to walk out of your office super mad or upset. There's no need for that. So usually we could, if you operate with authority, you're generally able to help people to understand that the decision that you're making ultimately is in their best interest. And if you're always looking at the other person's best interest, it's, you know, people feel comfortable with that. Let me give you an example of one that didn't go well. We had a guy who had a service dog, and he wanted to bring the service dog into the cafeteria, and he, you know, he just couldn't do it, and he was very upset, and he stormed out, and he threatened me, and he threatened a lawsuit, and you know, I just couldn't have him with the service dog in the cafeteria. It was just unsanitary, you know. And I'm a dog lover. So I suppose he could have, if he wanted to, I wouldn't have blocked him from talking to any of the board of directors. I think that you experienced me when I was there as having some perestroika, you know. Let's have openness. If I made a mistake, then let's fix it. I offered to show you all the financials there, you know. I distinctly remember saying, Robert, you want to come take a look at the financials? We'll sit in my office. I'd be more than happy to go over and I'll show you everything, including salaries, including what I make. I told you what I made. So, you know, if you have that, and I'm not suggesting that I have it or don't have it, but if you have a spirit like that, people become okay, you know? And I don't know what's going on there, but I never had a problem talking to anybody.
I'm talking with Doug Loisel, who's former director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center out at Coral Street, calling in from his new center of operations down south. You're in Los Angeles, right, Doug, or thereabouts?
I'm hiding out in Los Angeles. I'm the most highly educated janitor in the San Gabriel Valley.
Indeed, to say the least. But if in case anybody wants to call in and ask a question, there is an alternate line that people can call in on. That number is, for those who want to ask Doug a question or make a comment, 469-3119, 469-3119. So if anybody actually is listening to this broadcast and wants to, grill Doug about this issue or has some thoughts about it, or maybe one of your old enemies will call in, Doug, and denounce you for the fraud that you may well be, because who knows what the real truth is here. And I want to give people that option, to call in and say what's cooking. I know you and I had differences of opinion. You started charging for homeless meals 50 cents, and I didn't like that. And I guess,
right.
And I think that policy was continued for a while and then discontinued. I don't think.
I think we discontinued that. It was a pretty a dumb thing to do. So.
And why did you decide against charging 50 cents? There was a quarter.
Oh, it was hard to enforce, and it was somewhat discriminatory. The reason why we started initially was I think we were running out of money, so it was a way to generate some income for the program. We're probably having some cash flow issues.
Hmm. Now, there is apparently a policy for people to go into the Paul Lee Loft, which is the on-site shelter that it wasn't operational when you were there, but they discontinued.
It actually was.
Oh, it was. Okay. Did you require people to do 4 hours of what they now call community slavery a week, or that's what they now require if you're going into the Paul Lee Loft, as I understand it?
Yeah, I think the term is sweat equity is what they used to call that in social services. It would surprise me if you could get away with that according to HUD regulations. And I know that there was probably some HUD funding and community block grant money, which is, I think, HUD money. I think probably that would violate their contract. I don't think you can do that.
So you didn't do that?
No, I didn't do that. Yeah. And I don't think that. I don't think.
Well, that apparently, according to Andrea Morgan, that is what is now a kind of standard operating practice out there, that they are requiring 4 hours of work from everybody using the Paul Lee Loft. Now, I could be maybe with some exceptions or exemptions. And again, it's hard to get straight answers from Monica Martinez and the gang out there. And I've kind of abandoned trying on issues like the sleeping ban, in the sense that, for those who know that don't know, there's the law was passed that said if you are on the waiting list to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, the Paul Lee Loft or the River Street Mini Shelter, you can get your tickets dismissed. And in fact, the sleeping ban law does not apply to you, but they won't give you any evidence that you're on the list when you sign up for the list. And nor will they have a person at night who will tell a police officer or a citizen or a homeless person looking for a bed, whether they have any beds there, whether the particular person is on the list. So it doesn't really help you from getting a citation. But in theory, although apparently this doesn't always work, your ticket gets dismissed.
That issue, and we've talked about this in the past, just befuddles me, right? Because, first of all, you have everything at Homeless Services Center should be full. So everything is full. And so you have a list of the people that are staying there. So all you have to do is get that list and see who's not on the list. They should be excused of whatever citations they have. It doesn't it doesn't make any sense. They have a list of people who are there. They have their names. If your name's not on that list of people who are there, then you should be able to have your tickets excused if that's the policy.
Ah, but no, the policy is not that. The policy is only if you are on the list, and that is not the list of people who are actually in the shelter, but people who are on the waiting list will get their tickets dismissed.
Well, I just...
See, I mean, that runs into a number of problems. I've talked about it before. It says that a private agency can get tickets dismissed for you, and also, but, you know, only if you're on there. Hello? I think we lost him again. But we have been going on for a while, and it doesn't sound like anybody out there wants to call in on this issue. I really hope people are listening in, because this is interesting and educational, at least for me. Hey there, I bet this is the third time for Doug Lizell.
Yeah, I lost you one more time.
That's okay.
We did write some of those letters when I was there, by the way.
And you're talking about letters that to the court, right?
That indicated this person was on this was on the waiting list at this time, at the time they received their citation. We did write some of those, and in addition to that, they should have a form letter that just states that
shelter was full.
The shelter was full on this date, and this person was on the waiting list, and it should just have a few blanks to fill in. It's not a cumbersome activity for the staff. They just have to do, you know, 5 minutes of work.
Well, I can speak from personal experience. When I went to one of the community meetings that they had out there about a year ago, the head of the shelter with Monica Martinez in the room said, we won't give out letters indicating that a person is either on the list, A, or B, if the shelter is full, if they're not on the list, because they're going to be people who get camping tickets who aren't on these lists, who then come in and say, hey, I want evidence that the shelter is full so I can get the court to dismiss my ticket, and they don't give those out, according to the actual staff, as verified by Monica Martinez, who then turned around in a television broadcast 2 months later. And when I said, Monica, oh, this is kind of an outrageous policy, she said, oh, no, we always give out those letters. And it just amazed me, the kind of brazen, blatant shift of, I don't know, informational, the claim that she would make. It was just with her sunny smile, and she was so pleased. You know, it's just sort of a... Ooh, boy. It pissed me off, I must say. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to set up a system like that is not very difficult to do, and I would hope that they would consider doing that in the future, because I think it's only fair.
Yeah, I mean, it also, of course, is outrageous, too. It really indicates, it seems to be sort of a fundraising activity for the Homeless Lack of Services Center to say, well, if you're on our list, you'll get the special tickets dismissed. But if you're not on our list, even though there's no shelter for you anyway, you won't get your ticket dismissed. I mean, that's outrageous, and that's obviously an example of, you know, unequal treatment under the law. So it can't really stand, I would think, in a court procedure to have a private organization written into the law that will allow a person to avoid a legal sanction, but if you're not a part of the private gang, then you're going to get screwed for what is essentially life-sustaining and necessary activity, sleeping at night.
Right.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Doug. There it is. Yeah. Well, Doug. Those are some of the issues that you know, we've talked about in the past. We're talking about them again. Don Lane is supposed to be coming on the show. Monica Martinez apparently is. Not the show here. He refuses to come on my show anymore. I think he thinks I'm too mean to him. I don't think I'm mean to Don. I think I'm just, I'm pretty, you know, bald-faced in my characterizations. I try to be accurate, too. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'll hopefully admit it. And if I'm right, I expect him to address these issues. And, of course, I'm finding that he's, you know, a lot of the time he's ducking them and essentially covering for Monica Martinez and the policies or lack of policies of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. So we need you to come back, Doug, and take over the Homeless Lack of Services Center again. So I'm afraid we may have to draft you and bring you north.
I'd like that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. So, well, good. Anytime I can come on the show or anytime I have a chance to chat with you, it's always a pleasure.
I appreciate the background and updates, what's been going on, or at least what was going on. And I think it's helpful to compare things under your regime with things under the Martinez regime because, unfortunately, things seem to have gotten significantly worse. So.
Well, I hope it gets better.
Yeah, well, that can perhaps that can show us a road forward. We've been talking with Doug Loisel down there in Southern California. And is there a way people can address questions to you or comments? They can do that through the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is my number. Or if you want, you can give them some other email or number or website.
Email me at drdloisel, L-O-I-S-E-L, at AOL.
.com?
.com.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Doug.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. Good talking to you.
And it's good to hear you, too, and call back. And if you happen to be listening in on Thursday evenings or Sunday mornings and you hear something you want to comment on, please call.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, I like talking to you. Thanks, man.
All right. Take care, Robert.
Bye-bye. And that was Doug Loisel on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're tuned to, 101.3 FM. We're going to have a blast from the past now, a little something to that I kind of dredged out of storage. Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe is coming your way. This is about 16 years old, so some of the political references you may scratch your heads at and think, what the heck, particularly if you have two heads, or your head at, or the little head and the big head, whatever. Great comedy and satire from Free Radio Berkeley and from San Francisco Liberation Radio in the mid-90s. I like it, and I wish we were doing something here like it, but in the meantime, this is what we got.
Are you on a mission from God? Do you hear voices directing you to spray automatic gunfire on heathen unbelievers? And do you need a special automatic or semi-automatic weapon that's worthy of being an instrument of higher justice? We have the weapon for you.
God's Guns is a specialty shop for chosen people. People selected by the Almighty to commit random destruction in the name of a higher power. If you feel called to fire random rounds at abortion clinics, post offices, or fast food franchises, you may be looking for something like our sleek Armageddon model AK-47.
Each side of this weapon is engraved at no charge with the religious insignia of your choice.
Or try out this right-to-life rifle with chapter and verse of your religious rationale inscribed clearly along the barrel. You'll be the envy of your right-to-life affinity group.
Here at God's Guns, we don't do much return business. We know this will probably be your final mission before either your own demise or a long stay in prison. That's why we want to arm you with the very best.
God's Guns. Stop on by for our Christmas sale on ammo.
Bring the whole family.
God's Guns. For when you're killing for two.
And now for a word from our sponsor.
Looking for something for the man or woman who has everything? If you can't seem to find that perfect gift for your special someone, send for a free catalog from Independent Renderers and take a look at something entirely new.
Independent Renderers takes the fat sucked out of the thighs and buttocks of the celebrities you love and converts it to useful household products that you or your loved ones can buy for a low, low price and use every day around the house.
Celebrity baking grease straight from the thighs of Liz Taylor.
And Cher.
Liposuction extracts convert easily to rust-resistant household oils,
perfect for use on bicycles and the moving parts of sewing machines and vibrators.
I use my Roseanne Barr liposuction extract as a face cream before bed.
I use mine as a lip gloss.
Our catalog offers fat byproducts from 50 well-known celebrities transformed into a variety of products you probably use on a daily basis.
You'll be the envy of everyone in your circle.
Oh, my dear, how do you get your muffins so moist?
Well, let's just say I got a little help from Burt Reynolds' buttocks.
Independent Renderer's Celebrity Fat Byproducts catalog of household products and easy-to-use baking ingredients gives new meaning to the phrase, eat the rich.
Act now. Send for your free Celebrity Fat Byproducts catalog today.
And now, back to our regular program. Our Nose for News focus today is on the latest GOP response to the needs of the poor, the New World Orphanage. Here at the New World Orphanage, disadvantaged children from all over the nation are removed from their neglectful, impoverished families and given happy group homes in a quasi-military school setting. The children are just sitting down to their dinner.
Our Newt Gingrich, who art in Congress, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, here at the New World Orphanage, as it is in Congress.
Here is Morella Fiber to give us a tour of the New World Orphanage. Miss Fiber, whose picture is that up on the wall?
That's our founder and moral strength, Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, without whom these little children would still be living in their unhappy homes.
And just what is that you're serving today at the New World Orphanage?
Why, gruel, of course.
Gruel?
Yes. Gruel is rather traditional fare here at the New World Orphanage.
Well, I assume this would be a better meal than they would otherwise be eating?
Well, these children had homes, of course, and they must have been eating something. But most of their mothers and fathers were unwed, you see. So even if the food here is rather plain, at least they're here eating it in a stable environment.
These children were taken away from their parents?
Well, you can hardly consider them qualified to be parents, although, of course, they are parents. Not only were many of them unmarried, almost none of them owned their own homes, and the neighborhoods they came from were often extremely unsatisfactory.
I see. And how often do they get to see their parents?
We have supervised visiting hours once a week, but we find that the New World Orphanage runs much more smoothly without the constant disruption of visitors.
This place reminds me of something.
Excuse me, miss?
Yes?
If you please, miss, could I have some more?
What?
If you please, miss, could I have some more?
I think the child is only asking for some more.
Security!
Gruel.
Security! Please remove this threat to the stability of the New World Orphanage at once!
Well...
There, that's better. You were saying?
Well, just how this place reminds me of something. Well, Miss Fiber, is there something a parent could do to qualify for the return of their child?
Well, once a parent has a stable environment to offer their offspring, we, of course, would consider an application for the return of their children. A stable environment consisting of adequate financial security and evidence of a moral atmosphere in the home. Republican registration doesn't hurt. And, of course, a large contribution to the New World Orphanage can be helpful.
Nice.
We, of course, insist that all unwed parents acquire a husband or wife before the transfer. And we have a service right here matching up unwed parents with suitable marital partners.
But what if some of the parents prefer to pick their own marital partners?
Well, frankly, we think the government has much better perspective on this, and we must insist on a quality arrangement for the sake of the needs of these dear, dear children.
Of course. And the fact that putting a child in a government-run orphanage is actually more expensive than welfare. How would you address the issue of expense?
We feel, of course, that making sure these youngsters have a stable environment is worth the expense. But we're planning to make some adjustments to help offset costs. Some of these little kitties would, I'm sure, be happy to skip a few meals in order to help their government, and they certainly could be put to work making, say, license plates or other goods.
Now I know what this place reminds me of.
We're certain that with a few adjustments, the government can raise children more cheaply and efficiently than their parents ever could. Although corporate privatization of the orphanages is not out of the question, especially considering the angle of cheap labor, rather, I mean the need for these children for discipline.
Well, thank you, Miss Fiber, for showing us around Newt's New World Orphanage. We wish you and all your little charges the best.
We'll certainly do our best.
That was Miss Morella Fiber on behalf of the New World Orphanage here at National Corporate Radio. And now, back to you in the studio.
And thank you, NCR. We are in the studio again, and that, of course, was a blast from the way past from the Jolly Roger comedy troupe. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. This is Bathrobe's Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, your broadcaster under indictment for two felonies and two misdemeanors, Santa Cruz 11 favorite, which you can... You can check me out on in upcoming hearings, along with Becky Johnson, Gabriella Ripley Phipps, heck, a host of others. If you want more information about the Santa Cruz 11, and this unfortunately is not a joke or a parody or a satire, though it really has that quality to it, you can go to the SantaCruz11.org website, and you can get more information. Or you can go to IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, Indie, I-N-D-Y, Bay, BAY.org/Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, and read some of the latest updates. There was a hearing today in court in Department 6. Judge Paul Burdick, who has thrown out six of the 11 charges against six of the 11, posted by D.A. Bob Lee through Rebecca Young, the intrepid Cub district attorney, who's essentially the only D.A. on this case, and it's kind of a... Well, if it weren't so exhausting and didn't take up so much in terms of resources of these 11 people and their supporters, it might be amusing in a way, kind of a strange, picaresque satire, but it isn't, because... people have been suffering as a consequence of loss of jobs. They've lost their houses or their rooms, and some of them have even been some of them have lost their health. And yet this whole thing continues. But what happened today was that Judge Burdick was who, as I said, dismissed charges against nearly half of them, and two of them, that doesn't seem to make any difference to D.A. Young. She's renewed charges, which she can do two times if she wants, in spite of the actions of the judge. She wants to disqualify Judge Burdick because she doesn't like the fact that he's pointed out that she has no evidence that anybody formally trespassed in the building who has been charged, that anyone formally vandalized anything, that anyone conspired to trespass or conspired to vandalize, that should be facing 7 years in prison, which is what she's charging these people with, charging us with, I should say. And she wants to continue these charges. She's renewed the charges, and they'll be coming up again on July 23rd, I believe, against at least two of the defendants, Cameron Lorando and Angel. And they are going to be facing a preliminary hearing, which is an interesting kind of exposure to evidence where you get to see and hear evidence that they are going to present at trial, which is then supposed to give the judge an opportunity to say, well, you have enough to proceed to trial, or no, you don't. And in every case, Burdick has said, no, you don't. But that isn't stopping the prosecution, so we'll see if these two have already been dismissed once, but Rebecca Young is back again, trying it again. It's like she can come back and play craps with the public's money and our lives as many times as she wants, because the DA Bob Lee is funding her. And we found out that Lee apparently has a passion for victory in these cases. And that, of course, is really the issue, winning. District attorneys want to win. They don't really care so much as to whether the case is just or not, it seems to me. Once they are involved and once they are committed,
the objective is to win. And that, of course, is one of the problems with the adversarial system, although I guess I'm a fan of it over other systems in some sense. The problem is that you are not really dealing with justice here. You're dealing with a determination to get a record of wins, and that's what D.A. Bobley is doing. He said as much before the Board of Supervisors, according to one of our activists who has been closely following the D.A.'s funding, and he has said he doesn't mind spending, I think it was at $4,000 on an $80 fine to get the $80 collected as a matter of principle. I don't know about that particular case, but I know that the case against the 11 involves hundreds of thousands of dollars, if you consider all the costs involved. And that is, again, an attempt to apparently buff up the burnished reputation of the Santa Cruz Police Department's Vogel, the chief of police, involving and essentially to do attack and repress Occupy activity, which hasn't really been seen much of recently in Santa Cruz, but is still there to some extent. There are people who are still fighting to end the foreclosure fraud that Wells Fargo and other banks are routinely continuing to engage in. There was recently a bill passed at the state legislature level that may be signed by the governor. I don't know if it has been yet. Not giving those of us who want to stop foreclosures what we really want, but putting some minor checks on the situation. And occupations have always been a process that has been used of both civil disobedience and also simply First Amendment protest in different cities. Because, as Santa Cruz 11 defendant and activist Becky Johnson puts it, and you can read her blog, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking, vacant buildings are the crime. That's the crime, vacant buildings. And that's what we got a lot of increasingly in Santa Cruz and other cities, vacant buildings and vacant hearts and apparently vacant minds and increasingly vacant wallets. So that's an issue. Anyway, verdict at court was relatively quick to decide that he wouldn't be disqualified, much as he didn't want to be on the cases because he doesn't like these cases. He thinks it's a waste of, he seems to think it's a waste of his time, although he hasn't said that explicitly. And he has found all the cases so far without merit, not even enough merit to send them to trial. So he found Rebecca Young, the district attorney's latest motion to disqualify him, also without merit, actually, because as essentially any fool would know by reading the rules that say you have to disqualify a judge within 10 days of his being appointed on a case, and Burdick was appointed for all purposes way back in March, Rebecca Young didn't act then to do that. And therefore, she can't disqualify him from the case. Of course, what she can do is, when the cases are refiled, because the five of us actually who have upcoming hearings before Burdick that she was trying to disqualify Burdick from hearing our case, our preliminary hearing, once if Burdick dismisses our cases, she can refile the cases and then disqualify Burdick. So in a way, as I said before, it's an ongoing a roulette game where the House is always funded and the rest of us are always subject to the well, it's a rigged game against us is the problem. But at the moment, it was a victory today that probably could have been predicted and was predicted by all the attorneys and by the rest of us looking on. That I mean, Young didn't even bother to file a response to the attorneys who said you have to file within 10 days. She sort of apologized to the court for wasting everybody's time. And I had a real hard time not coming up with some caustic comment in court in a nice, loud, audible voice, because she is not just wasting people's time and wasting people's lives and wasting people's energy. She's hurting people through these prosecutions.
And I'm not really so much referring to me. I mean, it tires me out. It distracts me from stuff I need to do. But it actually has impact on other people. It frightens them away from the kinds of causes that they need to be mobilizing around, as we have this absurd election coming up that means absolutely nothing and involves no change in policies, from the war and poverty policies of Obama, the bankster-loving policies that both he and Bush have followed. There's no change. Whether it's Romney or Obama, you get the same crap, unless there's an independent force going on, and that, of course, is been, if I was going to say effectively muted. It is muted, but it's, you know, it's still there. There is a large crew of activists that was created by the Occupy movement that is still going strong. Anyway, the results of the court hearing were Paul Burdick is still on the case. There will be a preliminary hearing for two of the defendants, not the five that were in court today, but two more, coming up in mid-July, and then we'll be coming up, the five of us, in August under Burdick, and I'll be giving you more information, probably more than you want, more than I want to give, as that date gets closer. Tomorrow, Linda LeMaster goes back to court. She is charged with sitting on the steps of the courthouse with the Peace Camp 2010 protesters, the homeless protest that protested the sleeping ban and the criminalization of homeless people in the summer by the city authorities. She was arrested and faces 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. And that case is going before Judge Gallagher for status review. I believe it's at 9 o'clock in the morning in Department 2, for those of you who want to check it out tomorrow morning. Linda LeMaster, good luck, Linda, there. Linda's been struggling with this one for quite a while. She, too, has her own blog, Linda's Hearth. If you want to look for Linda's Hearth, I think it's lindashearth.blogspot.com. You can read her writing. She's very articulate, eloquent, and uncompromising. Though I often disagree with her at sometimes and accuse her of packing with city bureaucrats on some issues. But she's got a number of different sides, Linda has, and I really want to wish her luck tomorrow and encourage people to check out that case if they'd like to. Don't know if there's going to be much to watch. Her attorney is Jonathan Gettleman, who has adopted a rare procedure against 647E, the anti-lodging law that Linda is accused of violating. It's kind of a state sleeping ban, which is rarely used because it does involve a jury trial and an appointed public defender. And I don't think the city would prefer and the county authorities would prefer to use infraction charges, which don't give a defendant the right to a public defender, don't give her or him the right to a jury trial, and are usually just sort of resolved quickly. And if you prove to be intransigent, they can say three infractions that you don't deal with become a misdemeanor, and that's under the law the city council passed, which may be unconstitutional, actually. I don't think it's been tested in court. But anyway, let's hear a few more street interviews, because I talk a lot, and it's nice to hear another voice every now and then. You might want to talk, too. You can call in 427-3772, and you, too, can be heard by whoever's listening.
It's about 6:05. I'm talking with
Troll.
And Troll, we're here at the Calvary Episcopal.
This was last Monday, so it would have been, today is the 5th. It would have been the 2nd, it sounds like.
In the front yard. You've got a pooch with you. What's the name of this dog?
Charles.
And you say that you got a sleeping ticket. How recently did you get that?
Just this morning.
And what happened?
He gave me a ticket, and I told him to fuck off.
And where was this?
Down at the levee.
Were you alone, or were there other people with you?
There was other people getting tickets.
How many people would you estimate got tickets?
Like 4.
And how many police officers were there?
1.
Name of the cop?
Baker.
And did he offer you an alternate place to go?
Yeah, he tried to molest my dog.
Perhaps he likes dogs.
I Probably. They all got a hard on for me, and then they go try to molest my pooch.
Now, did he offer you a place to go sleep other than where you were?
Yeah, his house.
No, you must be kidding.
No.
And what did he say to you exactly?
Hey, baby, you want a cookie?
Sorry?
Yeah, he's like, hey, fucking, how long, would you rather be homeless here or up in San Francisco? I said here because it's a lot nicer weather.
And what, is this your first ticket from Officer, what's again, his name again is?
Baker.
Was this an officer, a sergeant?
Just officer, I guess.
And had he ticketed you before? Had you gotten any tickets here before?
Not by him, no.
And how long have you been here in Santa Cruz?
Just a couple weeks.
And how many other folks got tickets that this morning?
Like three or four.
Did he ask you if you were on the waiting list of the Homeless Lack of Services Center?
No.
And do you know about the Homeless Services Center?
Nope.
There is a provision in the law that says if you go down and sign up on a waiting list and they give you a ticket, it gets dismissed around sleeping if you're interested.
Okay.
You didn't know that, bro.
Mm-hmm.
When you say he offered you another place to sleep, did he say, here you can go sleep legally in a certain place, or did he offer you no legal place?
No, he just said just don't be sleeping on the levee or the beach.
And did he say that he had a complaint?
No.
Did he give you a warning before not to sleep there?
Mm-hmm.
And what about the other folks? Did any of them get any warnings, or did you hear what was going on?
No, I just heard them getting the ticket, so I woke up, and then I started walking. He said, hold on, I'll be with you in a second. I said, fuck you, I got a piss. Okay.
And did you get a ticket for urinating in public?
No.
Did you, in fact, take a piss?
No, not yet.
You held your water.
Tried.
And what about you? Were you ticketed?
No, not this morning.
And were you in the same area?
No, I wasn't. I was not here last night.
You were elsewhere?
Yes.
Were you outside?
No, I was actually at the hospital with my sister. But
you were indoors?
Yeah.
Any hassles that you've gotten from police or security guards?
Actually, we were on Pacific Avenue, me and my friend, and he wanted to get off Pacific to smoke a cigarette. It was at night, and so we went off Pacific, and we were in the parking lot by the Good Times, and we both got a smoking ticket, and there was only one cigarette, and I was holding it, but he gave him a ticket, too.
Well, they wanted you to be able to share.
Yeah, they said, we saw you share it, so you both get a ticket.
Oh, nice. And who was the officer who gave this to you?
Oh, I don't remember.
How many cops?
Two.
And was your dog present?
Yeah.
So, and the name of the pooch?
Goldie.
Goldie. And you are?
I'd rather not say.
Give me a pseudonym.
A pseudonym? Jay Metal.
All right. Well, thanks. And anything you want to add?
No.
Okay. And we've been talking also with?
Ian.
Thanks, Ian. Well, I'm here with Father Joel Miller, and the line is, it doesn't look as long as it might be for the end
of the month. It's not as long.
It is. I thought it was the end of the month, but no, it's the first of the month again. It's July 2nd. Joel, you said that the Association of Faith Communities, which is includes what groups?
Well, actually, it's about 30 churches, but active, it's maybe seven.
Right.
Seven churches. Holy Cross, Resurrection, First Congregational, St. John's Episcopal Church in Aptos, Circles Church, the Santa Cruz Revival. Those are the ones that come to mind immediately.
And your church, of course.
And our church, yeah.
Calvary Episcopal.
Exactly.
And there was a meeting that you folks called for because you were concerned about proposals that have been floated by former Mayor Ryan Coonerty, Hillary Bryant, the Vice Mayor, and Lynn Robinson, and also kind of publicized in the Sentinel to cut back homeless services, to initiate an ID and surveillance system, to do a number of things that were essentially, for me, a hysterical response and a non-productive response to a random stabbing that happened, the guy who happened to have stayed for a couple of days at the homeless, what I call, lack of services center. Well, which I call because they don't provide shelter for other than a tiny fraction of people in the homeless community. But You met with these folks, a number of you. How many of you met with, I guess, with Hillary?
Two of the members of the Associated Faith Communities, AFC, Herb Schmidt and Scott Galloway. Mm-hmm. And we came away with the impression that they told us explicitly they're not going to promote these policies and to be voted on at the city council. They feel like they have enough legislation and policies already on the books to enforce the politics that they want. And their politics is really very simple. They want to remove the concentration of homeless people from the city of Santa Cruz within the city limits.
The cancer of homelessness.
Yeah, they don't have a favorable view.
Eliminate poverty by killing the poor, perhaps. Yeah. By dispersing them. We don't want them to die. Just go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I mentioned that the world is round, and it's not flat. They're not going to fall off the edge of the earth.
Discovery for Ryan Coonerty.
Yeah. And
a square kind of guy.
But they said that they would like to work with us, and they're concerned that there won't be any more incidents like the tragic killing of Shannon Collins.
Of course, who knows if they're going to be. I mean, they can't predict that. You can't predict that, and I can't predict that.
Right.
But I guess the question is, do you get the impression that they feel they can initiate these policies without actually making them explicit through city council votes because they already have the laws to do it, or that they're not interested in these policies?
Well, I think that they think they can accomplish the goal of, we'll use the word, dispersing the homeless population.
So supporting is such a nasty word.
Yeah. So it's more evenly spread throughout the county. So I think that's their goal, and that's what they're going to try to do.
They consider maybe distributing these politicians throughout the county so they don't all congregate in Santa Cruz.
Well, we can do that next election.
Now, that's coming up, of course.
Yeah.
There's a concern that, I guess you mentioned that there was some criticism of one of the churches because there were incidents there.
Yeah.
What was that about?
I won't name that church, but they have an outreach program, and because there was some negative impact in and around their church, the neighbors were watching closely that those events and incidents. They said we're prepared to close down all services if there be more of these kinds of events, incidents, particularly something like a murder or a stabbing.
Well, but by the incidents you're talking about, which have to do with the church, I'm not going to name it either because you don't want me to, that has to do with allowing vehicles to stay in a parking lot. Is that the story there we're talking about?
Yeah. And they all,
it's been done for years, as I understand it, some churches.
It's actually on the books that a church has the right to have
95,
have three churches, three RVs on their property.
And a business can also have two if they want to. I don't know many businesses that do, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Or non-profit. Have you talked to the individuals involved with the church, are these legitimate concerns in the neighborhood, or are they, should we say, exaggerated, sort of homeless-phobic kind of concerns?
We mentioned a couple that appeared to be homeless and not be residents in the neighborhood who had all-out argument, yelling and screaming that was disturbing. That's the one he mentioned.
Which never happens for people in houses, of course.
No, right. They just can't hear them.
We understand. This is a homeless attribute.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. And it's things like defecating around the alleys and things like that.
Because we know there are 24-hour bathrooms in the city wherever you look.
Exactly. So those are the sorts of things. And they wouldn't close down services because of that, but that was just an example of the negative impact that they have, they're concerned about it.
But they didn't claim that Calvary Episcopal, the church that you are with, had a negative impact.
No, they gave us good marks and said we are much improved.
But was Cynthia Matthews present to give her testimony? No!
No, she wasn't.
But she will be on the council next year, so she can talk to you then.
Has to get elected first.
Yeah. Good point. We've been talking with
Father Joel Miller.
Any other thoughts about this?
No. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. One last question. Yeah. How expanded is the Interfaith Satellite Program at the moment? Interfaith Satellite Shelter.
Now at four churches.
And how do, what kind of, how can people get more information about that?
They should call me. That's Ian Mackay, who you, he's I think the only person that walks around Santa Cruz with a kilt. And a
I know that.
Is there a phone number or an email people can call if they want to get in touch, get more information?
You want to give your number out?
Oh, sure. It's 831-429-6635. And my email is chiefy007@hotmail.com.
And repeat that one more time.
Chiefy, C-H-I-E-F-Y, 007, or ZZ7@hotmail.com.
And your number?
831-429-6635.
Just wanted to make sure you got it, folks. Thank you, Ian. And thank you, Joel.
Thank you. Thank you.
And those were interviews out at the Calvary Episcopal Monday Night Meal, where you can go and you can volunteer to help. You can chat with homeless folks. If you're homeless, you can go get something to eat. And if you want, you can wander next door into the intellectual, ethereal land of Penny University, where you can hear some, sometimes a community topic, sometimes a more philosophical topic going on at the, and that also is open to the public. So it's kind of a free resource for those who are interested in either getting a bite to eat or getting a little intellectual stimulation, perhaps. Some of us are wondering why it's all talk and no action in terms of activism, which is what I guess I'm big on promoting verbally. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, in case you are just tuning in. This is Bathrop's Pier's Broadside Show. It comes on twice a week, 6 o'clock in the evening on Thursdays, and 9:30 in the morning on Sundays, so tune in. You were also archived at huffsantacruz.org in case you want to check out older shows. In Sacramento, there's been some activism again around the issue, which is really facing homeless people everywhere, of criminalization for life-sustaining activity like sleeping, as we have in Santa Cruz, the criminalization of sleep. As I mentioned before, Linda LeMaster goes to trial, goes to a status hearing tomorrow in Gallagher's Court, Judge Gallagher's Court, Department 2, in case you want to follow that at 9 o'clock tomorrow. And she will be represented by Jonathan Gettleman. But up in Sacramento, here's an article, Sacramento's Anti-Camping Ordinance Debunked. It's from February, but there has been a follow-up article, so I'm going to read a bit of it. There are over 1,200 people in Sacramento who find that it is illegal for them to live because they must live outdoors. Well, legally they could probably sleep if they didn't use a blanket or a sleeping bag to keep themselves warm and didn't use a tarp or tent to protect them from the rain. Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee first formed in 1987 in response to the city of Sacramento's adoption of a new anti-camping ordinance. Actually, I was never aware that was the reason why SHOC, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee, actually formed. Interesting. In response, SHOC organized protests and eventually participated in a legal challenge of that ordinance, which was then struck down as unconstitutional by the appellate court. The city followed up by enacting a new anti-camping ordinance that took into consideration when shelters were full. Today we have another incarnation of that anti-camping ordinance that provoked no moratorium when the shelters are full. And the shelters are always full with long waiting lists. Title 12 of the Sacramento City Codes deals with camping under Chapter 12.52. Under 12.52.020, some of the terms used in the ordinance are defined, such as camp means to place, pitch, or occupy camp facilities, to live temporarily in a camp facility or outdoors, to use camp paraphernalia. Camp facilities includes, but are not limited, to tents, huts, vehicles, vehicle camping outfits, or temporary shelter. Camp paraphernalia includes, but is not limited to, bedrolls, tarpaulins, cots, beds, sleeping bags, hammocks, or cooking facilities and similar equipment. So camping basically entails living outdoors. But it can also be defined as using camp paraphernalia. What? Paraphernalia? Paraphernalia is defined as your usual conception of camping equipment, but is not limited to camping equipment. I knew of a fellow that got a camping citation many years ago for setting his backpack on a park table. The backpack fell under that not limited to category.
The meat of the ordinance, 12.52030 in Sacramento, makes the following a misdemeanor offense, punishable by 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, I would imagine. It is unlawful and a public nuisance for any person to camp, occupy camp facilities, or use camp paraphernalia in the following areas. A, any public property, or B, any private property. Trying to sound like it's not really infringing on constitutional property rights, which the Constitution is strong on, it states, 1, it is not intended to, by this section, to prohibit overnight camping on private residential property by friends or family of the property owner, so long as the owner consents and that overnight camping is limited to not more than one consecutive night. This might actually be worse than the Santa Cruz sleeping ban camping ordinance. I have to think about it. Your children aren't allowed to camp in the backyard for the whole weekend, according to this Sacramento ordinance. It goes on in number two to further talk the reader into believing that they aren't trying to mess with property owners' rights. And in number three, says the city manager can issue a permit in relation to a special event. Similarly, the ordinance makes it against the law under 12.50040 for the storage of personal property on public and private property. It states, it is unlawful and a public nuisance for any person to store personal property, including camp paraphernalia, in the following areas except as otherwise provided by resolution by the City Council: any public property and any private property without the written consent of the owner. The rest of the ordinance talks about special event permits and the city manager and other technicalities. But wait, let's go back. What did it say? That you can't store personal property on private property without the written consent of the owner? Now, if I wanted to store my bicycle in my daughter's garage, would I need to carry around her written consent, or else I can be in violation of the camping ordinance, a misdemeanor offense? I hope no one is planning on enforcing that anytime soon. It recently cost Sacramento $408,000 to enforce park curfew against a few dozen Occupy Sacramentoans. Can you imagine the city trying to ensure that everyone storing property on other people's property have written permission? And can you imagine the reams of paper required for all those permission slips? Similarly disturbing is the wording any public property, which in actuality forbids homeless people or people that just went shopping at a sporting goods store, from setting any of their camping equipment on the ground if public property. Wait a second there. Anyone with any kind of personal property is hereby forbidden from setting down anything on the ground or on any public property in Sacramento. Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee continues to work around this inhumane ordinance, taking incident reports, referring, quote, offenders of the ordinance to attorneys or other legal avenues, protesting formally and informally, etc. Several years ago, we were even involved in a lawsuit against the city and county of Sacramento to try to overturn the camping ordinance through the courts in conjunction with projection of people's property that had been taken while they were homeless by law enforcement. I think it's protection she means. The court threw out the part of the lawsuit that tried to address the ordinance itself, but allowed the property protection portion to continue, which resulted in a win for the homeless plaintiffs. As I said, the Constitution is big on property rights. Though this ordinance is, on its face, cruel and uncaring toward those without property or the income to pay rent to a property owner, would things be much different if it were overturned? Would the city just come up with another ordinance? Or would they just use the similarly cruel and uncaring anti-lodging state law 647, she says 647J, which was actually what 647E, the law under which Linda LeMaster will be going to court tomorrow, the lodging law, that's the same law. They just changed the number, or I should say the letter section, to try to eliminate homeless people from their site. It is the real motives and intent behind the ordinance, not the stated motives, and the real people that support the ordinance that need to be changed, that needs to be changed. And this is no way legal analysis. This is more opinion by a piece by the very discouraged homeless advocate. And that's the author of that is Paula. And thank you, Paula, for that article. And here is the attorney, Mark Marin, who successfully did sue the city and won at least the personal property aspect of that, talking about an initiative that he is pressing to change the law. And let's hear that.
Thank you. this 30 pages I have in front of me is not a speech. Rather, these are sign-up sheets for the operation, the enterprise that that Ron suggested we're undertaking. We have been fighting for years to protect homeless people's rights to be outdoors somewhere legally. But in fact, everything that we've tried to do has only resulted in the protection of their property rights. It seems to suggest that property is valued much higher on the hierarchy than our personal and civil rights. What we want to do, however, recognizing that our goal, the goal of this organization and the organizations that comprise the Sacramento Housing Alliance, is to provide housing. What we want to do is take care of the people who are in line for housing. Those people are now homeless. They're living outdoors. And under the city ordinance, as it now exists, they are always illegal, always violating the ordinance that prohibits living outdoors, either on public or private property. What we are trying to do now, we've worked with the city to try to get them to agree to allow homeless people to be on a piece of property where they can set up their tents or set up some kind of housing preliminary to housing in a permanent setting, and we've gotten nowhere. What we're now trying to do is attack the ordinance that makes living outdoors illegal. So we're trying to bring a group together as a steering committee to figure out whether we're going to put an initiative on the ballot that would amend the anti-camping ordinance so as to say that during a time of shelter crisis, and we know we are in a shelter crisis where people are not able to get into shelters, funds for which are being reduced, and instead are living outdoors, but during that period of time, private, they will be able to live on and set up tents and whatever else on private property that private property owners make available to them. This is, we know the heart of Sacramento will open itself to homeless people and offer places for them to be. So what I have here, and all you have to do is come up and ask me, is a little sheet that says, I as an individual...
Distribute them to the tables.
Okay, we'll distribute them to the tables, my better half has said here. This will allow individuals and organizations who want to participate in the steering committee to revise the anti-camping ordinance to make it legal for homeless people to sleep on private property with the consent of the owner. We can do it, and we can change the law and change the world for homeless people.
And here's a second Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee. This is the Homeless Justice Award.
Just reported to me, she was at the Capitol. They are contemplating cutting the CalWORKs grant to $375 for three. What is rent? What is rent? It is more than $375. So I'm now going to yield to my beloved co-awardee, Mark Merritt.
I'm going to leave. I'm Ron Blubaugh. I'm going to let Mark have the last word because he was our main person along with Kathleen, and I just helped him. I have a lot of friends who don't know much about what all of you know about. They don't understand homeless people. They don't quite get it. And I always tell them that everything that you do in your normal life, if you do it out on the street, it's illegal. If you lie down to sleep and pull up a blanket over you, that's camping paraphernalia that you're pulling over you, and as soon as you pull the blanket up and have a pillow under your head, you're illegally camping. If you have to go to the toilet and you can't go in any restaurant, obviously, because it's for customers only, you're engaging in disposal of public waste upon in public. If you open a beer, as most of us might do some evening in the backyard, that's illegal. So almost everything in your daily life that you do, that all of us are accustomed to, it's illegal outside. So in this lawsuit, what we tried to do was to keep the police from taking their property. They took their property without notice, and destroyed it. So the lawsuit was all about stopping that. Now Mark's going to talk to you a little bit about another effort that we're going to engage in to try to stop this whole process under the county ordinance that now exists. Mark.
This 30 pages I have in front of me is not a speech. Rather, these are sign-up sheets for the operation, the enterprise that Ron suggested we're undertaking. We have been fighting for years to protect homeless people's rights to be outdoors somewhere legally. But in fact, everything that we've tried to do has only resulted in the protection of their property rights. It seems to suggest that property is valued much higher on the hierarchy than our personal and civil rights. What we want to do, however, recognizing that our goal, the goal of this organization and the organizations that comprise the Sacramento Housing Alliance, is to provide housing. What we want to do is take care of the people who are in line for housing. Those people are now homeless. They're living outdoors. And under the city ordinance, as it now exists, they are always illegal, always violating the ordinance that prohibits living outdoors.
And it looks like the video shut down here. But you can check this out yourself if you want to. It's on the Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee's website, and that was Attorney Mark Maron, who's been fighting for basic rights for homeless people, prisoners, and others for a couple of decades at least. He looks like he's been fighting for longer than that. Just about the end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm waiting for Uncle Dennis to come trundling into the show here with his From the Cream to the Dreg show, which is coming up next for 3 hours. I'm going to play a little of the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, another one of their little skits, before I leave. And I'll invite you again if you want to make any comments on the show. It looks like we had zero phone calls, so I don't know if anybody's listening or not, but I guess I heard myself talk, so that's something. But you can call the off-air number, which is the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Civil rights organization that meets every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 10. We actually met there. We didn't meet there yesterday because we were part of the July 4th protests, the broader peace and justice solidarity protest downtown at Ocean and Water Street that we participated in, also supporting the Santa Cruz 11 and supporting at the end of criminalization of the homeless, which, by the way, you heard Mark Maron talking about Sacramento. That's also the case in Santa Cruz. It is illegal to put down your backpack. It is illegal to sleep at night after 11 o'clock at night. It is illegal to have a campsite and your property will be seized and destroyed. Not stored, as is required by state law, but destroyed. Or at least that has been the case under John Wallace, and I haven't heard that there's been any official change in the policy. And it continues until attorneys and activists start documenting it and drag the authorities kicking and screaming into the courts, when sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But the more that each one of us becomes active and raises our voice when you see Officer Winston or Officer Warren, you know, or Officer Forbes or any officer, Officer Baker, Officer Clark, harassing a homeless person, draw people over to witness this and pull out your video cam, phone cam, whatever you got, and take photographs of it and make it clear to the police that this is not something that you appreciate seeing downtown or anywhere it's happening, because it is a blight in our community, and unfortunately it's becoming more and more socially acceptable to discriminate against poor and homeless people, and that's just simply wrong and it has to be fought. And that's what this program is about. And hopefully that's what people who are listening to this program sympathetically are going to do in response. So here's a little of the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, some more of it. Not as cutting edge as I'd hoped. Some of their other stuff is really good. This is so-so. And Uncle Dennis should be in the studio shortly with some Cream to the Dregs. I think he's back in town, at least I hope he is. And if not, we'll be playing one of his ancient creaky shows from the past, which we've played before, but we'll be playing again if he's not around. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be back again on Sunday morning or thereabouts, and, well, be talking at you then.
I was a tourist in Washington, D.C., drinking in the historical sights, marveling at the beauty of the Jefferson Memorial at sunrise and the majesty of the Washington Monument under the bright blue sky, when I made the mistake of walking down Pennsylvania Avenue to see the White House and saw, well, something that defied explanation.
Step right up and take your shot at the White House. Only 10 shots for $1. You're never too old. You're never too young. Step right up and take a shot at the White
House. Why? Wait! Has everybody gone mad? What's going on here? Why are all these people shooting at the White House?
Ooh, looky, Mommy. I got a window on the third floor.
That's really good, honey.
What are you teaching this child? What could these people be thinking? What's going on here?
Relax, buddy. This is all legit. We got a special permit for this.
You have a permit allowing people to shoot at the White House?
Of course. We had to do something. A couple of months ago, everybody and their brother were out here shooting up the White House without permits or nothing. It was chaos.